Welcome to the newest edition of the Sea Control Podcast, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. I am, as always, your semi-helpful host, Director of Online Content here at SimSec, Matthew Hipple. This week, the Surface Navy Association here in the United States is having its national symposium in Washington, D.C. Its topic? Distributed lethality, going on the offense. Now this term, distributed lethality, may sound familiar to some of you. It was printed in an article in this January edition of USNI's Proceedings, and it was signed by the admirals in charge of Surface Forces, OpNav N96, and Surface Forces Atlantic. Those of you who have been with us a bit longer will also remember that last year, in episode 43, it was the topic of an interview with Vice Admiral, then Rear Admiral, Thomas Roden, who was transitioning to his current position as Surface Forces. We thought it prudent, with the discussion likely to come out of this week's symposium, that we would rerun this interview from last year as a way to show the evolution of ideas from the discussion last year to the discussion in the article this January, to the symposium this week, and what folks have to say. Distributed lethality and offensive sea control, the concepts that Vice Admiral Roden spoke to during this podcast, is a different way of imagining modern-day American naval power. Most Americans, and likely the default of most naval officers, is to think of the carrier strike group as the way the United States Navy fights. Submariners accepted. I'm sure they're off doing their own thing somewhere. Distributed lethality and offensive sea control change that equation slightly. Reimagining the way that surface forces are employed to both increase their offensive capability and decrease the enemy's ability to detect and destroy them. I'm probably putzing somewhere around the symposium myself actually this week. So feel free to say hi, but in the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy the rerun of Sea Control 43, with then Rear Admiral Roden on Distributed Lethality, LCS and DDG 1000, right after this short break.
Do you like the Sea Control podcast? Sure, we all do. However, we're only a small sea in the ocean of content available to you, our dear listener, at the SimSec website. Sign up for a membership at www.cimsec.org/about/membership. China may have a 9-dash line, but our seas are clear, and we welcome your opinions and articles. Please take a moment while downloading this podcast to leave us a 5-star rating and a comment. We need them. Seriously. How do you think we paid this electric bill? Money?
All right, and welcome back. Today's episode of Sea Control is with Rear Admiral Rowden, the N96, or OpNav Surface Warfare Guy. So today's talk will be about the American fleet, our surface forces, and what they should be doing and what they will look like in the future. Sir, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Matt.
All right, so as we do with every guest, so I've given you a small introduction, but who are you? What are the major beats that you think are important for the audience to know, just to know where you were coming from?
Thanks, Matt. I'm wrapping up a 2.5-year tour here as the resource sponsor for Surface Warfare, working for CNO Greenert. And as I've traveled this 2.5-year journey, really what I've concentrated on is A, understanding where the surface forces are, where our investments need to be made, and what things we need to do in order to ensure that we have a surface force that can support operations across the spectrum and ensure that as we look to the future that we are fielding the capabilities that our combatant commanders need in order to be able to ensure that they can continue to execute their missions.
In support of this idea and these operations, you've written an article for us. And in it, you described offensive sea control and distributed lethality. For those that haven't seen the article, and it's been on The Diplomat as well, describe for us your concept of offensive sea control, distributed lethality. What prompted this idea, and how do you imagine it being operational?
Yeah, great question, Matt. Really, where I see us heading in the future is understanding how we are going to control the seas. And really, it goes back to the young days as an ensign when I was getting underway on USS Texas. It was kind of in the heyday of the Cold War. We had significant firepower necessary in order to ensure that we could project the power that we needed. And so we would concentrate our forces around the aircraft carrier, and that certainly was one of our power projection assets. As I look at the evolution over time of where we have gone, I think it's going to be important for sea control in the future to understand exactly how we need to complicate the problem for any of our potential adversaries that might exist out there. And by that I mean, as we have concentrated the lethality of certainly the surface forces and in our aircraft carriers and in the air wing on our aircraft carriers, a tremendous power projection capability in those ships. But we have also have a tendency to concentrate the defensive capabilities on our surface ships. And I think to create doubt, to create confusion, and to create the ability to control the sea in a much better fashion, we're going to need to distribute the lethality in our surface forces as we look to the future to complicate the targeting problems and to complicate the issues that are going to be facing our potential adversaries as we look forward. So what I'm talking about is looking more at understanding how we need to go on the offensive with respect to the weapons that we put on our surface ships. So we have evolved our defensive weapons, Standard Missile 2, moving to Standard Missile 3, and now the evolution to Standard Missile 6 are all very defensive in nature. And really the last significantly offensive weapon that we currently have in the inventory that we put to sea is the Harpoon. I think the reality is that we need to be able to reach out and touch our enemies at range and complicate their problems significantly. So I think that one of the things that we need to do is looking at the requirements for long-range engagement of our surface ships and the distribution of those ships across the force such that we then have the opportunity to create confusion and create a much more difficult targeting problem and a defensive problem that our potential enemies then have to go worry about.
So the world sort of considers the carrier strike group as America's premier way of deploying power. Do you see this as a diversification away from that, building a new kind of a new sort of surface group that doesn't deploy in the same way?
No, I think that for the foreseeable future, certainly the aircraft carrier strike group will be a force to be reckoned with, and really a significant and the significant portion of our striking power. However, I think that what is going to be necessary is going to be to ensure that for any potential adversary, they don't have to worry about that one asset. They have to worry about all of our ships that are out there steaming around. And so whether it's our littoral combat ships, whether it's our guided missile destroyers, whether it's other surface action groups or other entities that we have to deploy, they'll have to worry about those as well. They already have a significant problem in addressing the threat from the subsurface. I think it's a well-known and well-documented fact that our submarine force is unmatched on the face of the earth and will continue to be for the foreseeable future. Significant issue for them from my perspective and from the surface warfare perspective. I think we need to move in that direction for our surface forces as well.
You know, something I just realized in talking about offensive sea control and distributed lethality. You talked a lot about the distributed lethality, but I think maybe it'd be worth touching a little bit back to that offensive sea control. You talked about it a little bit when you talked about the carrier not concentrating everything in one platform. When you talk about offensive sea control, do you imagine it as ships, rather than countering, operating in an A2AD environment? And for those that don't know, I'm talking about area denial and anti-access. What is the key part of that offensive part of sea control?
Well, I think that, and again, with respect to operating in the A2AD environment, I think one of the things we have to do is we have to be able to penetrate into the A2AD environment with the ships that we have and with the forces that we deploy. Certainly, the penetration into the in the undersea environment is certainly capable with respect to the covertness of our submarines. And what I think that our surface ships have to do is have to be able to penetrate in there and again complicate the issues associated with any of the enemy forces that are operating in that environment in order to perhaps draw attention away from the forces that we're trying to, the big power projection forces that we are pushing into the environment.
Now, because this is the question that that everyone wants, even though it's been beaten to death, let's talk about LCS. But let's give it some framing instead of just talking about LCS. Within your concept, offensive sea control, distributed lethality, where does LCS enter into this equation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the things I think that is really important to understand about the littoral combat ship is the concept of modularity and the concept of the way we intend to employ and deploy those ships. First, let's talk about modularity for a second. One of the things that is a very attractive to me about these ships is the fact that that we will be able to evolve and upgrade the combat system and the striking power, if you will, of these ships in a much more modular fashion. So, for example, we're in the process of upgrading our guided missile destroyers and our cruisers to baseline 9. A tremendous increase in the combat capability of those ships, but it comes at a cost. A cost not only fiscally, but it also will cost temporally from the standpoint of the ships end up having to be offline for in excess of a year in order to be able to get that combat systems upgrade in. For the modular aspect associated with our LCSs, we can develop and test the combat system separate from having to go in to bring the ship offline. Once the upgrades are available for installation, we will be able to install those in a relatively short period of time, given the modularity of the ship. That's one of the important aspects of these ships. The second is that given the concept of operations that we have of operating a ship forward and a ship back and rotating the crews, we'll get a much greater operational availability for these ships forward. And I think that we've talked about before about the minesweeping, and we're developing three mission packages now for these ships now, the minesweeping or the mine countermeasures package. There's an anti-surface warfare package and an anti-submarine warfare package. I think that these are really the tip of the iceberg. We're concentrating very hard in getting these packages to IOC on the two classes of ship that we're building, the Independence class and the Freedom class. But as I work my way through other things, other ways that we might be able to employ these ships, I think there's great potential given the modularity of the ship to get capability fielded on these ships in a relatively short period of time as opposed to perhaps the longer timelines associated with a much more integrated ship.
So if I can ask just for a short aside on that, that sounds really reasonable, but the question I guess is that all this, the criticism coming out about LCS, where did we go wrong? The CNOs talked about having more discipline about LCS in the strategic thinking that the Navy had about LCS. Where did we go so wrong as to communicate LCS so poorly? Like, what did we try to do that created this huge controversy over what now seems, if you take it isolated, a completely reasonable set of, hey, it's going to be module, we're going to add stuff, this is for the ability to man, train, and equip. All these things are great. Where did we go wrong in trying to communicate that we're now having to reset?
Well, I think change is tough. So what we've done in the past is we've transitioned from the Long Beach and from the Albany class cruisers to the Leahy class cruisers to the Belknap class cruisers to the Ticonderoga class cruisers. We've transitioned from the Adams class guided missile destroyers to the Arleigh Burke guided missile destroyers. We've transitioned from Knox class frigates to Perry class guided missile frigates. We've transitioned from what to the littoral combat ship. And so we had a completely new concept for the way of putting capability to sea. Now, certainly some of this capability will be end up replacing capability that currently exists. The minesweeping capability that we're going to install on the Littoral Combat Ship is going to ultimately replace the 53s and the minesweeps that we have operating now. The capability that we're putting on the Littoral Combat Ships will ultimately replace the PCs that we have operating. But still, the concept associated with how we are going to man them, how we're going to train them, how we're going to equip them, has been completely different. And while it's kind of akin to attempting to ride a bicycle or build the bicycle while you're riding it, I don't think that we were particularly effective at the communication of what it was we were trying to do associated with LCS, because in many cases we knew we had a great concept, we knew we had a great opportunity to put capability forward in a very different way, and we didn't articulate that, I think, to the maximum effect that we could. I think that certainly with the deployment of Freedom, we learned a lot of things as we deployed her to Singapore last year. I think the opportunity exists certainly as we get Fort Worth out on deployment in the latter part of this year for a much more extended time. We're going to learn a heck of a lot about that as well. And so I think that we have the opportunity and the opportunity to gain momentum for these different concepts of putting combat capability to sea and putting combat capability forward. I think it's also important to point out that with respect to the minesweeping capability that we have on the Littoral Combat Ship is going to be significantly greater than the minesweeping capability that we have that exists today resident in a single ship. I think it's also important to point out the fact that the minesweeping concepts that we're going to put forward is going to get the people out of the minefield. I think we're going to rely a lot more on technology and on the autonomous nature of some of the minesweeping capabilities that we're putting forward. I think it's also important to point out from the ASW side of the house is while we have not fielded the system yet, certainly the studies that we have indicate a significant increase in our ability to track and hunt submarines, hunt and track submarines with the ASW package that we'll be putting on these ships.
To continue on with these questions about capability, is that one of the things you discuss is the ability to reach out and touch folks, make them make sure they know that you're there and you care. And one of those involves some sort of anti-ship capability. So we talked about ASUW, and what folks have been talking about is the long-range anti-ship missile. And the way that I like to imagine this is I try to compare in the ASUW realm the LCS to something like the Type 22 missile boat, which has an incredible anti-surface capability. How far away is LRASM? In generic terms, what might its range be, and what might it look like once it enters the fleet, and how do you integrate it into LCS?
Yeah, the long-range anti-ship missile, or LRASM, I think it's commonly referred to. It's going to be fielded in two increments. The initial increment is going to be fielded off of aviation platforms, and the second increment for OASUW, and really we're talking about offensive anti-surface warfare being fielded for the United States Navy in two increments. The first increment is focused on LRASM, and it's focused on LRASM being fired from an aircraft. And then the second increment will be looking at firing or moving towards getting that capability not only on aircraft but also on surface ships as well. And so really where we are is my friends in OPNAV N98, Admiral Manazer and his team are looking at shepherding the increment one capability through, because it's really focused on their platforms, and where we are focused in surface warfare is on the increment two side, and understanding how to bring together a study that we're executing, which is looking at the evolution to the next generation of the land attack weapon, with where we're going with respect to the second increment of offensive anti-surface warfare. and understanding where we might be able to bring those two together in order to execute the missions that we know we're going to have to be able to execute in the mid-20s and beyond. So that's really kind of where we are. And then we have some efforts underway to look at how we might be able to accelerate extending the reach of our surface ships in the near term in order to address some of the issues that we've had with some of the requests for capability that we've had out of the combatant commanders.
Now, we talk about the modules. Let's talk about the ship. The Navy put out a request for information, an RFI. How do you think, and this was specifically for sort of changes or a small surface combatant, how do you see the LCS changing? Is it an iterative process? We've got two different platforms. What does the future LCS look like?
Well, I would, certainly we are building at Secretary Hagel's direction, building through 32 littoral combat ships, and at Secretary Hagel's direction, we have initiated the Small Surface Combatant Task Force, headed by Dr. John Burrow, in order to understand what we need to do or what the appropriate approach beyond 32 is for these for the small surface combatant that we're going to have in the future. And so I would hate to – that Small Surface Combatant Task Force is due to report out at the end of this month, and I would hate to presuppose their findings before they've actually had the opportunity to go through all of their work. So I think that but I certainly have been involved in the efforts of the Small Surface Combatant Task Force as a member of the Flag Oversight Board, and as such, I think that the team that we've assembled is the right team. They are focusing on the right things, and I think that that the Secretary will be very pleased with the results of the work of the Small Surface Combatant Task Force once it's completed at the end of the month.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that when it comes out. Let's move from small to massive. So let's talk about the DDG 1000, the Zumwalt. First question up front, I'm sure this is one that a lot of folks ask, is experimental or future mainstay? What's the purpose of the DDG 1000? Yeah, it's a warship, we understand, fight and deter the nation's wars, but in a long-term strategic construct, is the DDG 1000 a model for our future warships, or are we just conducting an important experiment in testing new technologies?
No, this is not... DDG 1000 is not an important experiment. DDG 1000, I think, is going to field significant capability for the United States of America and for the United States Navy.
Maybe I said that wrong. I didn't say it's just an experiment. I mean, it'll be kicking ass and taking names. I meant, will it become like an Arleigh Burke where we produce very many of them, or is this very powerful group of three ships strategic purpose to field better technologies for another class of ships?
Yeah, I think DDG 1000. I mean, clearly we're building three ships of the class with significantly different technologies than technologies that we've put to sea before. Certainly, 78 megawatts of power being generated on these ships, as opposed to significantly reduced amount of power on previous ships, and that really is to drive the integrated power system, which will parse power not only to the combat systems but also to propulsion as well. There are significant, obviously, it's a very different hull form. It's a very different way to think about putting combat power to sea. Obviously, a different set of weapon systems with the long-range land attack projectile that we're putting on these ships, and the evolution to the next combat system and the next radar with SPY-3. First of all, I'm very excited about the capability that we will be putting to sea on these particular ships, and I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that we're going to again learn a heck of a lot from these ships as we put the capability to sea, and then leverage that learning and leverage the technologies that we're putting to sea, many of them for the first time on these ships, into ships that we build in the future. Whether those ships mirror the DDG 1000 or whether we just leverage the technologies that show the greatest amount of promise or the greatest amount of return on investment, I think remains to be seen. I can tell you that one of the things that I have worked on for the last couple years is understanding where we're going in the evolution of our surface ships. So we are certainly transitioning from building the Flight 2As to building the Flight 3s and the incorporation of the air and missile defense radar into our guided missile destroyers. I think we have a very good and solid plan for the execution of cruiser phased modernization, which will allow our cruisers to remain in service through the 20s as we execute a very challenged time with respect to the ship construction Navy budget as we replace the Ohio-class submarine. And I think that we are poised well, given the opportunity to extend the life of our cruisers through phase modernization, to then move towards a good approach to understanding how we are going to leverage what we've learned from the Littoral Combat Ship, what we've learned from the incorporation of the Air Missile Defense Radar into the Flight 3 DDG, and the incorporation of the technologies that were put into sea on Flight 3 on DDG 1000 in order to be able to get to the next class or classes of ships as we move to the latter part of the 20s and into the 30s. And I've got time for about one more question, Matt, because the sun never sets on the OpNav staff, and we stay busy all the time.
Okay, it breaks my heart. I'm going to have to skip a whole bunch of stuff here, but I'll go straight to the big one for you. You're transitioning from N96 to SURF 4. What are you most satisfied with that you leave behind? What do you want to see continue and completed? And what are your plans once you step up as SURF 4?
Yeah, great question, Matt. You know, as I look to heading to packing my bag and heading out to San Diego, I feel, first of all, monumentally blessed, humbled, and fortunate for the opportunity to head out there as SURF PAC and really as SURF 4 and the leader of the surface forces. And I appreciate certainly Seno Greenert's confidence in my ability to transition from the job that I've had now to the commander of SURF 4. I do feel that really it's I'm not transitioning as much as I'm continuing to focus on the future of surface warfare as I move out there. I think I've had about a 2.5 year prep session while I've been here and out in that N96 to prepare me for the work that needs to be done when I head out to surf out to surf for. I think we have a robust program that we have developed over the last 2.5 years, and I look forward to continuing a very close relationship with my shipmates here on the OpNav N96 staff and continuing to institute the programs that we put together. I think we've made tremendous strides on the maintenance side of the house and bringing the maintenance community together, driving transparency into that and getting the required maintenance that needs to be done on our ships and the recapitalization of our surface force through the private yards. And I'm looking forward to continuing that. I think we've had a very robust requirements development program for the training that's required on the surface ships. And I'm looking forward to continuing that work to ensure that we have the right investments for our ships and get our folks trained properly. We've done a significant amount of work here in understanding not only the manpower side of and the funding of the manpower on our ships, but also understanding how to get a better better view on the manning side. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And I think the final thing is that I'm looking forward to working very closely with Rear Admiral Jim Kilby and the standing up of the Naval Surface Warfare Development Center. I think this is something that has been a long time coming that's going to be absolutely vital to pushing the surface force into the future and to getting at a lot of the things that we have discussed earlier about getting back to our sea control roots and getting back to distributing the lethality of the surface force. And so those are, I think, big muscle movements that we have to execute. Plus, I got to tell you, I'm just excited about getting back to the waterfront and the opportunity to walk on the decks of our ships and to operate and interact with our sailors, because clearly they always have been and they always will be the finest that our nation has to offer, and I just get energized tremendously with the opportunity to spend some time on the deck plates. So that's really where I'm going and what I'm looking forward to.
And you know what, we appreciate you taking the time to spend some time here on our deck plates with the podcast. But right before you go, quickly, is there anything that you'd like to plug, articles or documents you think people should read, websites they should go to, or any sort of products that you think will be helpful to them understanding the future of the Surface Force?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. There's a couple of other things that have been put out in conjunction with the blog that I put out on SimSec, and I really appreciate you and the team at SimSec giving us the opportunity to voice some of the things that we think are on our minds. Captain Jim Kilby, or Rear Admiral Select, I guess Jim Kilby, put out a great article on integrated air and missile defense on SimSec, and Rear Admiral Charlie Williams put out a couple on ASUW and OASU, or ASW and ASUW. And I think those are both great articles for people to take a look at to really understand where we're headed in surface warfare, and that's kind of at the center of it.
Perfect. And of course, again, there's your article, Surface Warfare Taking the Offensive. Well, sir, I know you got to go. You are a busy man, and I really appreciate you taking the time with us. So thank you.
You bet, Matt. You take care of yourself down there, and I'll see you out in the fleet, and I look forward to that.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.